originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another brand new edition of Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, together again in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, and excited to have you with us on a show that is the show that trainers listen to, and that is 100% accurate. We have had so many trainers over the years tell us that they enjoy this program. They enjoy hearing the stories of their peers, and we have a good one for you here tonight. As a matter of fact, JT, I'm not going to waste any time getting to it because this gentleman has a resume as long as your arm. He has accomplished so much in the sport of thoroughbred racing, and we only have about 30 minutes to spend with him here tonight. We will replay the entire 30-minute interview in the second half of the program, so if you miss any portion, don't fret. You'll be able to tune back in from 6:30 to 7 and catch the second half of the show. But here we go. Tonight's guest has trained nearly 2,200 winners in his career. Those runners have earned more than $45 million in purses. And the 71-year-old who was born in Illinois is with us now. And boy, has he come a long way since those days. He is trainer Stanley Huff here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Stanley, welcome to Trainer Talk.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for taking the time. And because we are, and it's funny, you were joking before we came on the air and you said, well, I hope that that we can fill this whole half hour. And of course, I'm paraphrasing, but I hope we can fill the full 30 minutes with my story. And I told you, we're going to cram it all in. Your resume is spectacular, my friend.
Well, we'll try.
we'll give it a shot. All right, take us back to the beginning, Stanley. Where did this journey begin and this love of horse racing begin for you?
Well, my folks had horses. You know, I grew up on a little farm between in Palatine, Illinois, you know, next town from Arlington Park. Mm-hmm. And we were on the north side between Palatine and Barrington. And so I grew up with horses. We always had horses. And we had a few race horses. We raced there in Arlington Park a little bit, and then various places. So as growing up, we had quarter horses, and we had a few thoroughbreds. And so I was the one getting on them, and, you know, my dad would help out, and we'd get them ready and send them off. And then myself, the day after I got out of high school, I left Illinois. I went to River Downs, and I had like four horses, family horses, and went in with a friend of the family called W.C. Tompkins. It was Bill Tompkins. And he was a fellow that raced a lot in California, and then he'd ship out to, I knew him in Arlington Park when I was a kid. And then he ended up, you know, through Ohio in a little bit. So I teamed up with him, and that was in 1966. And then he ended up going back to California, and I stayed, and I would get a friend to saddle a horse. I was too young at that time to get a trainer's license. And I think my first trainer's license I got when I was 19 in Illinois. Then I was able to run some horses in my name as trainer. So I think it might have been 1967 or 68 when I won the first race in my name. And Then I raced through Ohio a little bit, back and forth, and come up with winter at the farm in Illinois. And then go back out to Ohio and all through Ohio, ended up, you know, Cleveland through Akron. And, you know, back then it was Raceway Park and tracks that are probably no longer there, or they're harness tracks, you know. So made that for a couple years. And then I got a shot to take some to get some stalls at Tampa. And that was, I think around there again in the fall of 69, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I turned 21 in Tampa, and my license was good in Illinois and Ohio. But then when I get to Tampa, you had to be 21. And I was only 20, so I got somebody. I'd won a couple races in another fella's name, a fella I knew from Chicago. But I actually wasn't even supposed to be in the betting area. So at that time in Florida, you had to be 21 to be there. And then from there on, I've raced in Tampa, and I went to Finger Lakes for a year or two. And then I started going to Detroit from Tampa, and that's when I started doing pretty good along those lines. And raced in Detroit a few years in Tampa, and then when Calder opened, I think it was it opened a year before, I think, but 1973. I end up, I had the two oldest boys were it was my youngest son at the time. He was just starting school. My other son was about in first grade, and they were, you know, traveling so much wasn't good for that. So I decided to settle in Florida. So it was in 73 I went there, and then started doing a little better and a little better, and then, you know, started winning a pretty good bunch of races, and had my first stake winner, I think, at Calder, or it's called Trusted. And then I was able to do pretty good there. So I was able to be, I think, leading trainer there maybe 5 or 6 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Between there and Hialeah at the time. And the fall meet, they would spread the meets between, they had the tropical meet at Calder, and then they had either Gulfstream or Hialeah had the middle date. And I would always do better at the, in the end dates. The middle dates was always tough, and I'd use that to freshen up a little bit. And then after that, I took my first horses to New York in 1980. Was a horse called Proud Appeal and a horse called Irish Tower.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of took me out of Calder. They were pretty good horses, and Proud Appeal won a couple stakes as a 2-year-old in 1980, and then he would lay up, and I had to lay up Irish Tower too, and they both come back in the fall and the winter of 80-81. And Proud Appeal had won, the Gotham and a couple of 2-year-old stakes, and then he won the Gotham as a 3-year-old, and he won the Bluegrass, and I actually own half of him, and we sold him, he won the Bluegrass, and we sold half of him after the Bluegrass. So he was a favorite in the Derby in 1981. And he had won 8 out of 9 going into the Derby. And there again, we sold half of him. He come out of the Derby with a little problem. He had a problem before, but he had an ankle problem. did not run any good in the Derby. And he only run like twice after that. And then he was he went to Gainsway for stud, because that's who we sold half of to. And then he had a fertility problem, and so he never really majored. So he ended up standing in the north a little bit, and I bred some mares to him. And he wasn't a bad sire, but he ended up dying of colic after about maybe he had two or three crops. And Irish Tower at that time, too, had also run out a bunch of stakes. And we sold him to Burton Jones, and he was one of the first sires there at Airdrie. So that was my start in New York racing. And then I was fortunate enough, I trained for Harborview for a year or so, and the Firestones, Burton Diana, for a few years. And then I kind of sat back a little bit and had a farm and raised more, you know, like that. And left New York for, a couple of years. And then went back again with some other outfits. And had a pretty good run. You know, we've always done pretty good. My main, probably for me, what I would, a lot of times early on, until a couple of those private jobs, I would always mostly own part interest of the horses. And I would go on partnerships. And I was able to, the way I was able to do better financially was once in a while I'd come up with a horse that could run and I'd sell them. So, I mean, I sold some pretty good horses and did well with them. And I think that's what probably I did the best, you know, so I was, pretty good at that. So that took me through New York, and I retired about six, seven, 8 years ago. I had lost the Rob Sham horse. Mr. Rob Sham had passed away. Mrs. Rob Sham, we had a pretty good run. We had Awesome Marie at the time as a two-year-old, and Discreetly Mine were the two-year-olds of that year. And when they turned three, she decided, there was another manager came in, which I didn't kind of agree with, and we parted company at that time. And shortly thereafter, I had a horse called Adios Charlie, and a mare called, it'll come to me. But, I had a couple pretty nice horses, so I ran that out a little bit, and then I was about 62 or 3. I'd lost my wife of 30 years to breast cancer, and I decided to retire at that time. And then a few years later, 3 or 4 years later, Hunter Rankin called me, and he's the president of Sagamore Farm. He just took over and that, and he wanted me to come with him and help. You know, we had to weed out some horses and sell some, buy some. And so we started buying some horses, and I did that for a couple. It's been about 4 years now. And then last year, the trainer we had, it was having some family issues and needed to stay in Baltimore. And so we had horses that probably needed to be somewhere else too. So that's when I jumped in and started training again. So these are horses that I had something to do with, either picking out the sires or buying or selling or something. Hunter and I did that pretty much together. And so we just wanted to see the fruits of the labor. So I'm going to do this for a short period of time, probably, I would say, maybe another year, and just to see how, like, horses like Gold Campaign, Recruiting Ready, and horse called Stars Are Cool. And some, we have a couple that haven't run yet that we we truly like. So there's a group of horses that I wanted to see through, and then I'll once again ride off into sunset again.
That, Stanley, that may be one of the greatest recaps we have ever heard of an entire career in about 15 minutes here on this particular program. We've been doing it a very long time. We're visiting with Stanley Huff here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is, of course, Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton.
Yeah, it's interesting that you partnered up early in your career with people, and it seems like a lot of owners love to be partners with their trainer. They think they get extra special care or something. Which
yeah, well, back when I was doing it, you know, the numbers were different. You know,
right.
Again, you know, like you say, in the late 60s, 70s, and I always liked it because I started off with my own horses, kind of family horses, and then I had one owner by chance I got, which was, I thought, amazing. I think I was getting $12 a day at that time. I thought it was like a fortune, you know. and that's who kind of, and I was able to go there. I didn't partner up with him, but then as I got other owners, you know, a lot of them were claiming horses, and I'd go in partners, and we'd do that. So I built up, I probably had 50, 60 horses at one time in Florida, you know, which was a big stable at that time.
Right.
Maybe 40 to 50. And so I was able to, and most of them my own part of. And then, of course, with Proud Appeal, Irish Tower, those horses sold, you know, for several million dollars. And so, you know, it doesn't take many like that to help you along. But nowadays, you know, like I bought, Proud Appeal I bought for $30,000, and You and I bought for $70,000, and Caller ID I bought for $100,000, and this Distinct Habit I bought for $60,000. So back then you could buy horses pretty reasonable. Now I'd hate to go in with partners with like some of these guys, and you can't hardly buy a nice horse for less than a couple hundred thousand. So it'd be a lot harder for someone to get started like I did.
Yeah, Stanley, you know, I was going to ask you about the experience of being part of the Kentucky Derby for the first time in 1981 with Proud Appeal. And I've asked several trainers about that, and they always talk about how special it is to make that walk over and to be part of that atmosphere. But you had the privilege to win a race that many trainers have never won, at least American trainers, and that was the Japan Cup with a horse called Half Iced back in 1982. And because we're limited on time, I want to let you talk about that experience for a minute. What was that like?
Well, that was great. I mean, that was a horse we bought. I bought from Mr. For Firestone, and we bought him after he broke his maiden, and then I think he was maybe second in an A other than, but he finished good, and it was on the dirt, and we bought that horse, and I don't know, we won the A other than or something, and I was looking for a race. I think I sent him to the, I want to say the race in Chicago, like the Secretariat or something. And he won that, and that was his first time on the grass. And then he went, I think he won another race, and then ended up getting invited to Japan, which was, I think it was the second year of the Japan Cup. And it was John Henry and it was Stanera, and I forget. It was a great bunch of horses from around the world. And we were lucky enough to get invited from the U.S. So I think it was us and John Henry. And, you know, he was a late three-year-old, and I don't know. You know, it was a great experience going over there, much, you know, different. And at that time, they really, you went to a training center, and then you shipped on the day of the race, kind of, or maybe the day before, to where they actually run the Japan Cup at Tokyo Race Course. And, but the whole experience was great. And then winning the race was just, it was like a dream You know, it was like you were dreaming. It's almost like, I suppose, winning the Kentucky Derby. You know, I mean, it was kind of that way. And it was over there, it was a major event. So it truly was a great experience. And we went back the next year with the same horse. When we got there, he come up with a tendon problem. It was surely going to go on him. But we're there and everything else. Here, we probably would have stopped. But I went ahead and run him. He finished fourth. And the second year, Eddie Maple broke off. And the first year, Donnie McBeth, a great rider that passed away shortly thereafter. But then Eddie rode him, and he was due to ride another horse on the card, and that horse scratched. And it's a funny course because you kind of run and you kind of finish uphill. And it really wasn't. He got beat a length and a half, I think, and had a terrible trip. So he might have repeated if that hadn't happened. And we sold him to we sold him to an outfit, I think, in Australia and he stood over there. So. But it was a great experience.
Whenever you get a chance to represent the United States internationally, that's got to be
I didn't hear you.
Whenever you get to represent the United States internationally, that's got to be a big thrill in itself.
Oh, it was. It was. And, you know, I was still relatively young at that time. I think that was my first year, maybe with Firestone. And I was with them a few years. And, gosh, they were really treated me. You know, they were racing more in Europe. And got to go to Ireland and be around that a little bit. So that whole time was a very good experience for me, and I enjoyed that a lot. And I did.
Stanley, outside of the moments that we've already discussed here at this point to the show, when you think back on your career, what are some of the other moments or races or horses that will stand out to you that immediately come to mind when you think back about Stanley Huff's training career?
Well, you know, like I said, I had those two horses. I mean, well, I had Discreet Cat, you know, and we got him ready. We raised him for Rob Shams, and Discreet Cat he trained like a great horse, you know, and I ran him here at Saratoga towards the end of the meet, and I told everybody, because by nature I was a seller anyways, but I told everybody I knew that it's really run, and he did. He ran a great race. He you know, ran fast and looked great, and that was the story I told. Right after that race, shortly thereafter, Kieran McLaughlin came to me and wanted to buy the horse for Sheikh Mohammed, and they offered a lot of money, you know, and I, like, you know, $3 or $4 million, and I said, God, it was great. And I told Mrs. Rob Sham, and she had no need for money. She was well set, and she wanted to race, and I completely understood. I was glad, really. And then came, I'm going to say a few days later, and Kieran came back to me and said, you don't understand. Sheikh Mohammed really wants his horse. And he gave me an offer that was staggering. And I told Mrs. Robsham, I said, look, I know Paul, which was her late husband. I know he was a businessman. I couldn't go to the barn every day. If we turned down this offer, you know, I couldn't. Every day I went there, I'd be worried that he'd be, you know, something wrong with him or something. I said, if he goes on to win the Kentucky Derby, he's not worth any more than what we're going to get. So she reluctantly, we sold him reluctantly. And he went on to do pretty good, but he ended up with some sort of infection. I think one of the last races he runs was the World Cup that last year. But he was a very, very good horse. So those kind of things stick out. And I had one other kind of funny thing. My first couple years in Detroit, there was a young guy came in from, I don't know where he's from, Idaho or when, and he worked for Vanberg, you know, and and us watching him. All the horse has been running in the bushes. So he, the young guy, get on him, himself, and he worked for Bob Irwin, who ran the Vanberg horses in Detroit. And I reached in and claimed the horse, and I saw this young guy, and he was kind of running himself. He went back, and he had to get him in the paddock. And, gosh, he tore the bridle off. He stormed out of there and ended up being Billy Mott. You know, so I thought that, so Billy and I laugh about that a lot, So I actually claimed his only horse. And then he kept on working for Vanberg and the rest is history. I mean, he had one of the best careers you could have, So along the way, you run into a lot of people. So those kind of things stick out I was fortunate enough to have a lot of nice horses. I never won a classic, but if I had one that good, I probably would have sold him, So that's kind of my deal. And I've always kind of went after the economics of the game because, first of all, I was about as broke as you could be in a young family. So I was always aware of, the only way in this game is you got to sell at some point if you're going to survive in it. And that's all I could say to people, is you can't always just buy or you're going to, I don't care who you are, you're going to have to sell something, either breeding rights or something, in order to last in this game.
Yeah, that's true. I sold the horse one time that I named after my son, and then
and that's
he won
truly
first.
About all I got.
Yeah, it's been a remarkable ride for trainer Stanley Huff, who is our guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Stanley, that was such an enjoyable 30 minutes. I'm gonna come back to you later, though. You owe us another 30 minutes. I will come back to you at some point, and we'll sit down and hear part two of Stanley Huff. But that was phenomenal. Thank you for taking the time. I know you've got your family with you in Saratoga. Go enjoy some family time, and all the best moving forward, my friend.
Okay, guys. Thank you, too.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Stanley Huff here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Your son, was it Miles?
Yeah, it was
Miles.
Yeah,
what was the name of the horse?
Miles of Stars. So he won the first time he ran for Ron Ellis, and somebody said, why did you sell that horse? I said, I got a lot of horses. I don't have a lot of money.
What a great philosophy, though, right? Yeah, and Stanley was able to retire. He came out of retirement just recently. And now training for Sagamore, and we'll see. He said it might last another year, and then he's going back off and riding to the sunset again. Good for him.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. I
all
wish
class.
He'd stick around a little while longer.
Yeah, me too. What an enjoyable interview that was. We'll replay the entire thing coming up right after this commercial break. If you missed any portion, stay with us. And don't forget, you can check it all out later via podcast at horseracingradio.net. We're back with more Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton, right after this.
Nominations are now open to the Fasic Tipton November Sale, the world's premier breeding stock event. The sale annually produces the highest average and median of any mixed sale in the world, and in 2018 sold 22 horses for $1 million or higher. Held the Monday after the Breeders' Cup, this one-night sale offers leading racing and broodmare prospects, proven producers, and selected yearlings in the most electric atmosphere you will find at any thoroughbred auction. Nominate your best today, the Fasic Tipton November Sale, where stars shine brightest.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Millridge offers as agent three quality yearlings to the Saratoga Select Sale by Candy Ride, Lemon Drop Kid, and Pioneer of the Nile. Selling 61 yearlings with 79% winners, 5% grade 1 or grade 2 winners, 13% graded place, and 21% stakes place runners since 2005. And since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 34 grade 1 winners, with Oscar Performance, who is standing stud at Millridge, their latest. Millridge, raising and selling racehorses.